maritime training is key to the safety of the shipping industry and its people. Today you will be hearing from Ral Harris, Chief Creative Officer of Ocean Technologies Group. You will hear from Ral about how e-learning has changed in the last decade in the maritime space, moving beyond compliance in training and individualized training and the impact of AI. Hi, this is Marcus Hand, editor of SeaTrade Maritime News, and today we're in conversation with Ral Harris. Ral, thank you so much for taking the time to appear on the SeaTrade Maritime podcast. To start off, could you briefly introduce yourself and what you do at Ocean Technologies Group?
Sure. Thanks, Marcus. Great to be here. So, Ral Harris, I'm Chief Creative Officer here at Ocean Technologies Group. Coming into, I think this is my 20th year working in the maritime e-learning space. And my remit at Ocean now is I look after the brand, the marketing, the communications, and industry outreach is a big part of that as well. So that's about me being out talking about what we do to the industry, but perhaps more importantly, listening to what's going on and feeding back into our organization. So I'm a member of a few different industry groups, for example, that I work with on sort of, you know, initiatives that people are doing.
Okay, great. With that sort of 20 years of experience in the sort of maritime e-learning space, can you perhaps just tell us a little bit about how that space has changed and the training space has changed over, say, the last 10 years?
Yeah, I think the last 10 years is certainly a big acceleration, but I think probably even the last sort of, you know, 4 or 5 years has shown the biggest sort of changes in my time here. And I think there's a few things I'd point to there. So one is a sort of broader acceptance of e-learning, about learning digitally and stuff like that, moving more, I wouldn't say away from in-person training, but certainly it becoming something that's an equivalent to it in many regards or for certain specific subjects as well. And largely the big change over the last sort of 4 years of that has been more on the regulator side, on the sort of, you know, those that are sort of the industry tastemakers, if you will, as far as what's accepted and so on. And I think they've certainly moved to be much more accepting of both of digital learning, but also of the need for digital learning and why they've had to sort of look again at sort of approving and accepting that as a route to achieving the learning outcomes. The other thing to say is obviously technology has been more of a leveler and in terms of making much more possible. So I think where we are today is a situation of ubiquity, really, where you can have an access training anywhere, you know, in the cloud, on board vessel. And of course, mobile, which is a big change, really, because it's something that there's that sort of direct one-to-one relationship with the user. So if we can know much more about who the user is and their preferences and what they like, then it's much, you know, more possible to tailor experiences to them. And I'll perhaps come back to that in a little bit of time. Simulation, I think, as well, is something that's changed with more powerful computers and more intelligent ways of sort of set up for cloud, for example. We're able to do things like cloud simulation on a fairly simple sort of PC, which I think is a big game changer in terms of accessibility of simulators, which before were big installations in physical locations. And then, of course, you've got things like VR and AR as well. So in terms of the number of things in the toolbox, in the armory for those that are designing learning experiences, it's much more to play with there. The other thing I'd say about the training space is that I think compliance is no longer sort of seen as enough. You know, there's that need to go beyond compliance, beyond the basic minimum standards. And so you see with a lot of sort of charter requirements, things like OCIMF, RightShip requirements, that kind of thing, people are looking to push much, much further on. And they're sort of, those are becoming de facto standards. And that in turn is driving the need for things like competency frameworks and even quite excitingly in the last few years, seeing things like behavioral competencies. So we're looking at the individual more in the round, I guess, in terms of what we're looking to develop with them. And another change I've seen as well is that the shore side is becoming more important as well in terms of thinking about how the shore and the ship are working together and the sort of competencies that are needed on the shore side as well. And I would wrap all of that up by saying that that's sort of moving from just a simple training kind of scenario to something that's much more about a sort of a human capital management strategy, getting the most from your team, really.
Okay, well, a lot to sort of dig into there. I think that sort of whole thing of sort of moving beyond compliance, what are you seeing as the sort of most important areas of demand and need for training from that?
I think that drives a certain adoption of sort of the kind of subjects that you're covering and what you're actually using e-learning for. So it's moving from just sort of basic training requirements to kind of sort of, you know, what you have to cover off from a safety point of view, from a compliance point of view, to show that you're training and you're doing regular training on X, Y, and Z. And actually thinking about the kind of organizational health and what you're trying to create there. So soft skills, we've seen big acceleration there, things like mental health, you know, but then there's within that, there's also leadership, there's also communication, things like that. So you're sort of really thinking about the kind of workplace that you want to design and what's the best way of preparing your people to create that kind of experience. And I think ESG is driving a lot of those changes as well, in terms of expecting you to have data points around what you're doing about diversity, what you're doing about bullying and harassment, those kind of things as well, cybersecurity policies. So all these things are kind of coming together. And people are realizing that you can make e-learning part of that strategy in terms of how you build that resilience in the organization. Another area, of course, is the amount of technology that's coming on board now. So things like original manufacturer training, OEM training, that's becoming much more important. We're putting much more technology on board ships and expecting people to then just be able to pick that up. So, of course, there's a big training element to that as well. And then when we look at what's starting to emerge now, it's that energy transition. So that's obviously new fuels are the big sort of game changer there and the thing that's sort of grabbing a lot of headlines at the moment. But then beyond that as well, you've also got energy saving and that kind of thing too. So all of these things are part of the training mix now that they weren't perhaps 10 years ago. And on top of all of that, you know, so what does that lead us to? That leads us to a lot of these sort of additional complications in terms of we're looking for people who are much more digitally savvy. We're looking for people who are more empathetic, able to have good leadership skills, communication. So we're looking for higher quality people, higher caliber people. And at the same time, those kind of people are becoming harder and harder to find as we're sort of searching for new crew pools and that kind of thing. It all leads to a situation where we have to think much more carefully about how we're finding talent and developing talent.
So both a different type of training and a different type of people, essentially, that you are training.
Yeah, and I think the sort of kind of cultures that you need to create. I mean, culture is essentially the big driver of being able to reach that sort of operational excellence that charterers are looking for now, and that sort of ESG is asking you to kind of be that kind of organization that we're looking for, a sustainable organization that can work to that higher standard. And all of that in itself is a more complex thing to sort of to try and govern as a business. And so you need to have a sort of a learning and development strategy in there that gets people to where you need them to be.
So does this mean you're looking at a lot more sort of customized training rather than just kind of buy the book, you know, pass this so that you're in compliance with such and such?
Yeah, I think you articulate it very well there. I think that's exactly what we're talking about. I mean, when you think about maritime training and how it's been set up, it's sort of largely cookie cutter in the sense that we're looking at specific ranks and proficiencies that different ranks need to achieve. And we're assuming that everybody's kind of starting from the same place and is the same kind of person. And of course, the reality is very far from that. You know, everybody's coming to the table with slightly different levels of STEM education, start different levels of aptitude, behavioral things as well, different personalities, learning styles. And so if we really want to kind of get the most from individuals, then we really need to start to think about personalizing experiences for them as well, and actually sort of coming up with something that's going to work for them as an individual and that allows them to really focus on the areas that they need to grow in. And of course, the difficulty there for an industry like ours, which is very cost conscious, you know, with a very sort of flexible workforce, is trying to work out how you're going to do that at scale. And that's where I think technology perhaps can solve some of those problems.
That was exactly what I was going to ask you, actually. How do you sort of do that and structure the training so it's much more individual? You know, what does technology enable you to do on that front?
I think it's a bit of a mixture, really. I think technology is able to sort of be the backbone of it, but I think you've got to have learning strategy fundamentally at the heart of it, which can work in that way. So the biggest observation I can make is that the focus on learning outcomes, if you really want to streamline what you're doing, then you really need to be really clear about what is each of these learning elements that you're using intended to achieve. Now, whether that's something that you're doing on board the vessel, you know, or one-to-one, it could be a mentoring type situation. It doesn't have to be a digital one. Or it could be, you know, a very targeted piece of e-learning or a piece of, you know, cloud simulation, whatever it might be. You really need to understand what those learning outcomes are and what that content really contains to be able to then map that directly to an individual. So on a very simple level, we're looking at things like adaptive learning, which is where you sort of front load the learning to the person and then you do the assessment at the end. And the assessment at the end then determines, did they learn everything that you expected them to do? The problem with that is, of course, that you don't know what they knew before they started. So with adaptive learning, you flip it and you do the assessment at the beginning, and the assessment then sort of tells you, therefore, what that individual, where that individual's learning gaps are. And if you then have content which is correctly sort of identified at that learning objective level, that then means you can be very prescriptive in what they're doing, and you can perhaps leave out some of the things that they know already. That's one example of where you can do that. And then, of course, the other applications and things like machine learning and AI that allow you to sort of, as you learn more and more about an individual, and as you learn more and more about what they're doing and the work they're doing, it gives you an opportunity to think about then how you can then prescribe the right training for them to deliver.
So it doesn't necessarily sort of require a sort of human intervention to come up with like an almost individual curricula, but you can use AI or something.
I don't think we're there yet, but I'm alluding to that really as being a potential solution. At the moment, that's why I think the way we sort of define ranks and things like that at the moment is still helpful, in that we can kind of map out the proficiencies that that person needs and map what they're doing. I think the thing that we need to be able to do is capture much more of what they're doing in terms of the experiences they're gaining, and think much more about all these different learning opportunities to see and collect that information and build a really solid picture of what that individual actually knows and understands, so that we can then think about what we prescribe for them. But at the moment, that process is still a lot of human intervention in thinking about, how do I map the requirements that I have for that individual? And that becomes very interesting when you start looking at data, when you start actually mapping and putting data together. So for example, if you start to look at where deficiencies are coming from, results from audits, all that kind of thing, and you pull all that data together, you can sometimes see, as we do, that organizations will have problematic areas that they're not necessarily have a training strategy for. And you can look and see some of the behavioral things that are in there. So for example, if people are very sort of volatile training picture, where the training is largely a reaction to an event that's happened. So whether that's some sort of observation in an audit, or worse, you know, it could be that in some sort of an incident, and then the training sort of happens and you see those sort of volatile pictures normally repeated. So I think all of that at the moment takes human analysts to look at and make recommendations and make changes. Over time, I think we might be able to see that AI has a very good application for that, to be able to crunch all those different inputs of all the different things that are happening. You know, for example, common deficiencies that are picked up in specific areas of the world, things that are germane to specific trade routes, that kind of thing. Also broader legislative changes, and absorb all of that and make recommendations. But I think you would always want to have a human being looking at that recommendation and making sure that it's the right thing. I mean, this is a very safety critical industry, and I think we always need to have that confidence that that's being looked at by a human. So I see it as being a pathway where it will become more and more that the human has got more information to work with in a much more clearly defined way. The machines will do some of the legwork of pulling together everything that you need to consider, but then you'll still be one making that consideration.
With all of that, is the industry and also the regulatory framework that goes around all this, you mentioned the, you know, safety being the primary factor here, is all of that ready for this kind of change?
I don't think we are as a world, you know. I don't think it's just our industry that's thinking about that. I mean, I think like sort of, you know, in terms of the technology aspect I'm referring to here, I don't think we're in a better position than a lot of places to be able to deal with that. But I think, you know, when we look at, is the industry ready to achieve the things that it needs to achieve, the energy transition, the sort of digitization of our industry, the sort of pressures that we're under in terms of going on in the broader geopolitical sphere at the moment, I think we have a very resilient industry that has a very good track record of solving these kind of problems. So I think that I'm always optimistic about what we can do as an industry, because I think the record is very, very strong in us being able to adapt and to change. But it's a very broad industry, and I think there are some that are much more ahead than others. when we start to look at where the pinch points are, a lot of it's about regulation for me, and it's a lot about those standards that are emerging. And what we've seen, as I mentioned, the speed at which technology is changing things, and also, you know, cultural things changing as well in terms of how people are working with technology, you know, how we need to look at the way in which people learn, etc. Yeah, I think sort of legislation moves very slowly. I heard just last week at CMA, actually, I think maritime legislation, internationally agreed legislation, actually moves pretty fast compared to the rest of internationally agreed regulation. So perhaps sometimes we give it a bit of a hard time. But still, you know, the speed at which you can bring that many countries together to agree what goes into international law and stuff, it is by nature a slow process. And what we've seen as a result of that is that more and more has been being packed into best practice guidelines, and people like sort of Ockham, Intertanko, Rightship, you know, these are all people that are putting in guidelines and best practice guidelines that then people are expected to follow. Now, those may not be compulsory or whatever, but they become compulsory if that's what charters require and if that's the standard that's demanded. And I think that's where we need to look at, where we need to be careful, because if we see things start to fragment around trades, around particular routes, around regions. You can see, for example, at the moment, you've got legislation coming through that's really affecting shipping from the EU, for example, and the same will no doubt follow in other countries too. I mean, not that we haven't always enjoyed the same standards everywhere, don't get me wrong, but I think that around some of these core topics, want to try and avoid fragmentation, because it's very difficult then to try and manage that as a global business with a global movable workforce. So those are the areas where I think as an industry, the more we can get consensus, the more we can agree standards, either at that regulatory level or at sort of complementary level across regions and across trades, I think the better.
Yeah, we've got a lot of changes coming through, and some of those will be regulated quicker than others. I thought it was an interesting perspective. You said that, you know, shipping's regulation, you know, people are saying it's actually not that slow, because I think it's a tendency to feel it is when you're in the industry. But in terms of training people for those changes, is that now going to be a lot more done on board, or, you know, sort of in real time while the seafarers are serving on ships, rather than having to go ashore and do it during their kind of essentially their holiday period?
It's quite interesting, actually, you know, sometimes, because what I mentioned, this is my 20th year working in maritime e-learning. When I came in, you know, we were always doing it on board the ship, and it always made a lot of sense to do as much training as possible, you know, in the flow of work, in the place that you're working. So I find it quite strange to hear that argument. For me, it's sort of just been the way that I've always assumed it would work best. But I mean, certainly, yes, I do hear more and more of that, people suggesting that needs to happen. And I think for me, it seems inevitable that as you move more to a just-in-time training approach, to a just-in-case type scenario, you know, in other words, our history is to front load a lot of that training into the initial competency certificate that people get, and then assume that that's pretty much there, and then they may just need a bit of a top-up refresher training and pick up certificates as they need to take on certain roles. I think that model inevitably comes under strain when you have something that's constantly moving, constantly developing. And when we look at things like new fuels, for example, that's a very good example of where an enormous amount of change that you couldn't possibly have prepared for like 10 years ago. And in fact, people can't really prepare for it now because they're not sure exactly what it's going to look like. So we're entering into a world, and the same is true for you and I as well. You know, we can't expect that we've learned what we're going to learn, that to do our job and that's it. All of us need to be constantly reevaluating and accepting that lifelong learning is the way that it's going to be. And ships are no different. And so it's going to be very important for people to be able to access and learn wherever they might be. Now, obviously, they spend a lot of time on board vessels, so I think that's something that they'll have to do. But there'll be also, even when they are back at home as well, to be able to access material and prepare for the next voyage, and what they need to know there is going to become really important as well. So I think that ubiquity, that sort of ability to access stuff, that ability to be very targeted in the learning that you're doing and what purpose that learning serves, I think is the real way that we need to go.
That sort of targeting of the learning, does that stop it from becoming kind of like overloaded because you've got a, you know, very demanding day job on a ship, and then you've got to do this learning in the evening before you go to sleep or whatever?
Well, I think, yes, we do need to be very mindful about the seafarers' working conditions and the fact that that often time is not sort of put aside for learning and for career development as such. You know, that's something that's sort of expected to do in the downtime or whatever. So we need to be very mindful of that, but we also need to be mindful of throwing things at our seafarers which they're not prepared for, and then the stress that then puts them under. As I heard a lot of stuff last week about sort of tech stress, where people are, you know, they're having sort of more and more software and systems put in place on the vessel, but not necessarily prepared for it, and that causing quite a lot of anxiety and stuff like that. So I don't think we can really get away from the fact that people need to learn more. We can't ignore the fact that there are going to be new things that they need to train on and absorb. So I think we have to look at being smarter in how we utilize their time. And I think that some of that is, you know, some of that is about learning design and about the things like I mentioned, like adaptive learning and personalized learning, so that they're really focusing on the areas of weakness that they have themselves and where they need support. But I think it's also more broadly thinking about how we organize things on the vessel and looking at some of the lower value things that they're doing from an administrative point of view, and whether the technology can support some of that to create the space for some of these other learning experiences and mentoring and all those great things about sort of getting the right atmosphere on board and everything.
So it fits into that whole sort of cultural picture that you were talking about earlier.
I think so, yeah. We have to design the kind of employee experience that we want to have. And, you know, I've heard terms like the sort of the new social contract with the seafarer and stuff like that. I think this is becoming something people are really starting to think about now. You know, what is this career that we're offering them, and how does it work, and what's the expectations? And I think, you know, my prediction would be that companies will have to also look at factoring in time in person's schedule that they can invest in the development of new skills. And I think those that do will benefit and see enormous benefit from it.
Yeah, no, I can definitely see that. If you look at that as a more sort of broader picture, then what do you see as the landscape for maritime e-learning going ahead?
You know, certainly I think a blended approach will be the way of the future. I think there's still some things which are best done, you know, person to person in face. But I think we'll start to see a much more investigation into, or much more thoughtful planning around, what is the best time to do that. So that blend between asynchronous learning, which is being sort of, you know, done in the person's own time at their own pace, and synchronous learning experiences where you're getting the value of that interaction. I think people will be much more careful in terms of how they design learning experiences and work in that way. Also, as well, I mentioned it sort of, you know, the just in case to just in time. I think there'll be much more learning that's being done in the flow of work, much more sort of, I'm about to do X procedure, I need to go and do some learning before that. I'm moving to another vessel, the vessel has these characteristics, I need to do that learning while I'm on this vessel. I think we're going to see much more of that kind of thing. And that means that much more learning is going to be self-directed. And I really think that that's probably one of the biggest challenges for us. You know, we have a tradition in the industry of seafarers kind of doing the training, having the training sort of imposed on them, if you like, of what they need. You know, it's been very much kind of like spoon-fed, in a sense, of what you need to do. And I think that will change. I think people are going to become much more active participants in the learning that they're doing. And they're going to need to be. They're going to need to be able to identify knowledge gaps themselves. And they're going to have to sort of, in a sense, judge their confidence level about what it is they're doing and work out whether they need to receive more training. And that's sort of nothing that we're sort of really geared up for at the moment. That's a real cultural shift as well, I think.
So how does Ocean Technologies Group fit into all of this sort of vision that you've got there of how this is going to change, and what sort of products are you developing to facilitate that?
Yeah, I think we're looking at much more as this sort of human capital management strategy, really. We're looking much more at sort of organizational health and holistically getting the most out of the human being. So, you know, training is sort of core to what we do, and it's something that we haven't really sort of changed our beliefs around how to do the sort of the fundamentals of the training part, but it, looking at it much more as the overall employee experience. So that means like looking at bringing in much more of the sort of company values and that kind of thing. So we've got much more tooling developed now for companies to be able to put across their message and to wrap what we're doing in their sort of organizational voice, if you like. So tools that can enable them to create content very quickly that augments what we're doing, breaking that content down, as I said, into smallest possible units that we can. So we've been revising our training library as this sort of what we're calling adaptive ready content. So that means breaking it down into sort of micro learning units of 3 to 5 minutes that effectively become like a box of learning Lego, if you like. So you can then assemble that, you can put in some of your own material around that, so that things are sort of, as you design the learning program, you might put in some company specific stuff, then some more generic stuff. You might include some manufacturer training in that. So it's about sort of being able to design that whole kind of, what does the human being need in the round to be able to optimize their performance? Behind that all is really that thing about building the right culture and the organization that you want to be as well. And then a lot of that is then about sort of, well, how do we know where we are? And so that means there's much more sort of data that companies want and want to understand. They want to be able to look much more at their behavior and so on. So we're looking at all the technology that we can bring to bear that really supports that. So on a simple level, what we record and where those data points might be useful to a company, how we can then make that available to overlay with other sets of data to really give that picture of what's going on. Because I think part of the problem that we've got at the moment is we've sort of accepted as an industry that digitization is the way forward, but we haven't necessarily digitalized what we're doing. So we're not really thinking at that data level and really analyzing what's going on in our business. And partly that's because we've got these huge volumes of data that are potentially unrelated. We've got quite a lot of silos happening within organizations as well. So people who may not really realize that they're impacting another part of the organization by what they're doing. So it's about looking at how do we bring all that picture together. So a lot of what we're doing at the moment now is sort of looking to modularize our applications. At the moment, we've got learning and assessment solutions, that's a big application, big crew management application, big fleet management application. We're actually looking to say, well, if we break all of these things down as units, if you like, modules that can sort of much more easily relate to each other, that allows us to then sort of build that data lake and build those tools to integrate that so that we can see what impact we're having from one side of the application to some of those other areas. And we can identify learning needs in that way as well. So if we can see, for example, what's happening in the plant maintenance system, it might identify certain things that we can work on from a learning and a training perspective that might then support that too.
I like that concept of a learning Lego. That was really sort of visual description. How far along are we in this process? And, you know, what sort of timeline are we looking at here?
It's a good question because there's lots of different parts to it. And obviously, we kind of look at continual release process, if you like. So rather than sort of the old days where you used to sort of bet the farm on a big new release that was happening in 2 years' time or whatever, we're sort of looking at breaking things down in a much more different way and adding the value that we can as quickly as we can. So I mentioned, for example, with the adaptive ready content or those learning Lego bricks, you know, we've got, say, 800 plus, I think it's probably well over 900 titles now in the library. And we've refactored a percentage of that. I can't remember exactly how many, but I think it's over 200 now that have been refactored in that style. But we're not going to wait until we've got the entire library in that style, because we can start adding value now with those core topics that are used by the most. And so the adaptive learning platform that we've been working on has been fairly complex. And it's been this symbiosis of having that assessment platform and the content that then supports it. But I think that should be coming out this year, and we'll start piloting it, I think, in the second quarter of this year, and we'll see what kind of results we get from that. So that's a kind of a near-term thing. Sort of much more personalized learning pathways that people want to build. Again, that's something that's kind of really an extension of the competency management type approach, but giving the customer the opportunity to create and design those programs themselves. Again, that's something we've got on the slate for this year. And we're hoping to do something towards the end of this year that sort of really demonstrates the sort of more modular approach that I was talking about. But I think that in the background, it's the rig architecture and everything that we're doing to be able to kind of break these different modules down. And what we're developing, everything new we're developing to a new architecture. So we're kind of putting in place all the pieces all the time, and they will add value as we go along. So I think we're not talking about a future here. This is something that's happening now, really. And then in terms of the data analytics piece, again, you know, a lot of that is about ongoing projects with customers to identify. We do that at the moment at a human level. We'll look at data with people, make recommendations with them in our sort of, you know, at an account manager level. Over time, we'll be able to release much more of that to be less reliant on the human and much more reliant on technology. So it's a kind of evolutionary process, really.
Great. I'm really sort of looking forward to seeing some of those things as they start to be rolled out and hearing about what you're doing. Just like to thank you so much, Ralph, for taking the time to talk to our listeners today about the whole maritime e-learning space.
It's been a pleasure, Marcus, and always happy to share thoughts with you. So thank you for having me.